The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of redlegnation.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, and we're happy today to be joined by one of our spotlight players, Mr. Tucker Barnhart, catcher for the Pensacola Blue Wahoos. Tucker, first question, have you ever seen a blue wahoo?
I have not. I've just seen it on our hats and our logos and stuff, so I don't know exactly what they look like.
We're really happy to have you back with us, Tucker. It's been too long, and that's my bad, so let's try to do better in the future.
I appreciate it. I'm glad to be back, and I always have a good time.
All right. Let's talk about – we haven't had you on since, like, early last year before the season, so let's talk about last year a little bit. You spent the first half of the year playing for Ken Griffey Sr. out in Bakersfield. Tell us about Griffey compared with some of the other managers you played with and how he's different and what he stresses and his expectations, that kind of thing.
Well, Griff was a great guy to play for. He's one of those guys where you can sit down and talk to him for minutes on hours upon hours and just listen to him and pick his brain, all the stuff that he's been through and everything and situations that he's played in. I mean, there's not one thing that he hasn't been a part of. And it's good to know that he's going to always have an answer for you as far as if you have a question about a scenario or a situation that you're really not sure about. You can always go to him and ask him, and it's something that he's been through. They're in a situation that he hasn't been through.
Is he any different in what he stresses or in terms of developing than other managers you played for, or his expectations any different, anything like that?
No, I didn't think so. I thought he was just a guy that wants to win, and I think everybody that I've played with or played for is the same way. I mean, they want to go out and they want you to develop, but they also want you to win too. I mean, it's a lot easier and a lot more fun to develop and work on your game when you're winning. So it's the same. I thought it was a lot of the same things. Nothing out of the ordinary as far as what he stressed or preached when he talked about development or anything. He just wanted you to play hard, and I think everybody's that way.
Did you get any big Red Machine stories from Griffey?
Oh, yeah, we got a lot of different ones. I mean, a lot of different the story that I enjoyed the most when he would talk about him and Junior. Him and Junior talking about playing with Junior was the cool part for me.
You talk about winning, and in the minor leagues, as a fan, you know, if you're going to pay to go to a ball game, you want to see your team win, whoever you're there rooting for. But it is kind of a conflict sometimes between developing players and winning as a team. Is that something? I mean, you said the managers stress it, and I think the Reds organization is stressing that more than they did a few years ago. But do you see it as a conflict, or do you see if you develop, the team will win?
You know, I think, in my opinion, you have to do it. I mean, if you want to develop, I don't think you want to develop guys and say, oh, well, you know, it's okay if we give a game away here or there. But we're developing. I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to go about it. And I think the Reds do a good job of really wanting to put you in a position to win. And I think you have to do it because, I mean, you have to develop winners. I mean, you're not going to, in my opinion, you're not going to win in the big leagues if you don't win in the minor leagues, just because I think winning is an attitude and not necessarily something that you can develop. And if you have a group of guys that come through the minor league system and they win at every level, then, I mean, eventually they're going to help out the big league club win in the big league. So I think that, like I said, the Reds do a great job of preaching, I mean, development, yeah, but they also preach winning. I mean, I think it's a lot easier and a lot more fun And yeah, I think you develop better if you win. There's something to be said about a team that wins, and then, I mean, obviously, than a team that loses. I think that you could develop a lot better when you win.
And like you said, it's a heck of a lot more fun to play on the winning side than that's a good beat every other night.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a lot easier to realize. I mean, what you're doing. I mean, it's a grind anyway. Going through playing 142 games a year, and just sometimes kind of scuffling, thinking, when am I going to get called up, or what happens, or why am I struggling the way I'm struggling? But if the team's winning, then it kind of takes that off your mind, and you're not necessarily thinking about that all the time. But if you're struggling and you're losing games and everything, then that kind of comes to the forefront.
Let's talk a little bit about that league. We haven't talked to many guys that played out there. Tell us a little bit about the league, what the good parks and the bad parks. The attendance doesn't look like it's real high in that league.
The league itself, it isn't a bad league. It's fun to hit in, actually. I mean, there's the ball travels pretty well, but I wouldn't say that it's something that's just some of the things that I've heard about it, that it's just unbelievable to hit in. I mean, yeah, it's fun to hit in. I mean, the wind blows out in some places, but still, I mean, you're still hitting a round ball with a round bat, so I wouldn't say that it's the easiest, that it's by far the easiest league I've ever hit in my life, because that's not the case. But, I mean, the travel is good. We weren't blessed with the best setup in Bakersfield as far as the park. The parks are kind of older and stuff, but the travel was good. We never left after the night of after a game. We always to go to a place, I should say. After, like, if we were on a getaway day on the road, we would leave and come back. But our farthest trip was only 4 hours, and it was to San Jose, which is, in my opinion, the nicest place in that league. But it wasn't bad. The park, like I said, it wasn't the greatest, but Bakersfield was a nice place in the city, actually. But the travel was good. You go to some nice places. You see California. I've never, other than last year in Bakersfield, I've never been in California for an extended amount of time. So it was kind of cool to see some places that you hadn't ever seen before, and it was pretty good for the most part.
You may not even be aware of this, or may not know the answer to this. I thought I read not long ago that Bakersfield just got financing for a new ballpark too, I believe.
I did see that. I think it'll be great for that city, because they'll be able to build it. I think I read that we're going to build it over by Cal State Bakersfield, which is the nicer part of the area, or part of Bakersfield. It's over by the college, and there's a lot of things over there to do, a lot of nicer area and everything. So I think the attendance will creep up. I don't know exactly how it'll be, but from what I've heard, it's going to be nice.
Is it strange going from, like, playing in Dayton, where you had 9,000 every night, you know, no matter what happened, to playing in front of a lot of empty seats? Is it tough as a player?
It gets there sometimes because you feed off the adrenaline of fans and everything, and playing in front of people, it helps you get going a little bit, I guess. And in Bakersfield, I mean, the lack of people that were there, I mean, it kind of got to you a little bit, especially, like I said, when you're scuffling. I mean, it's kind of tough to be excited to come to the park. But I mean, in Dayton, you always had that thing, well, I'm going to play in front of 8,000 or 9,000 people tonight, so it's going to help me keep going a little bit. But in Bakersfield, you went to the park and you had to really force yourself to get going and get pumped up for the game.
When you got called up, you were hitting really well. Your OPS was 780. You were hitting .278. You were getting on almost at a .400 clip. You were at .371, and you were catching like almost 40% of the base runners trying to steal at with you. I assume you were pretty happy with these numbers.
Yeah, I was. I felt like I made some strides as a player last year. I really struggled for the first time in my pro career. I struggled pretty bad early in the year, and in April and beginning of May. But I felt like I turned it around and was fortunate enough to get promoted in the middle of the season. And I felt like I went through a lot of things that are going to make me a better player in the long run. as far as learning how to deal with struggling and how to get through that, and just knowing in myself that I'm good enough and that I am going to get through it. And it's just sometimes it takes a little bit longer than you would like. But I was happy with the numbers when I got called up. I really didn't pay attention to them that much. But again, I was happy with them, and I felt like I performed very well.
You talked about struggling early and your season turning around. And excuse me. Was there something that you discovered? You know, did you find a hit? You guys find a hitch in your swing or something like that, or was it just grinding through it?
To be honest with you, it's just grinding through it. I really wasn't doing anything differently than I had in the past. I had some bad luck here and there. It would seem like that I would my first at bat or two in the game, I would line out somewhere, fly out to the wall or something, just like if I would just catch on a little bit more on the barrel, or the wind was blowing out just a little bit more instead of in a little bit more, and somebody or somebody's playing a little different in a little different spot in the infield where a ball went through, a ball had dropped in or whatever. But it seemed like there were times where I couldn't buy a hit, but no, I didn't really do anything differently. I just kind of getting into my own head at times and just telling myself that I'm going to get through it, and just believing in myself was the biggest thing for me. Because, I mean, I would see myself go 0-1 or 0-2, and instead of telling myself I got 2 or 3, possibly 3 more at-bats in the game to get out of it, I was saying, oh, man, I got to go up and hit again. So it was just getting through that mindset and really being excited to go to the plate again, and knowing that I – was just one swing away from getting out of a slump was tough for me to get in my head at the beginning, but I finally did, and it paid off.
It's funny you talk about trying to, you know, having to concentrate in every at bat. Pardon me. There was a really great article, and I don't know if you saw it on, I think it was on ESPN's website this week, about Joey Votto and how he, you know, how he tries to ramp it up almost every at bat. If he gets 2 hits and he wants to make sure he wants to get that 3rd, and he said that's advice he got from Pete Rose, is never be satisfied, always go real hard after the next at bat. You might want to take a look at that article. It was really, really, really good. I think we linked to it off on the website, as a matter of fact.
I didn't know he wrote an article, but I'm gonna check it out.
In early July you got excuse me again, promoted to Pensacola, where you were playing for Jim Riggleman down there last year. Tell us about Jim.
He's a very good baseball mind. I really enjoy playing for Jim. He knows what he's doing. He's a different type of manager than I played for in the past, as far as he was quiet and really, really businesslike. And I enjoyed that. It was a good change just to, when you could play for a former big league manager, I mean, you pick his brain and you see the differences in the things that he likes to do as opposed to other guys. Because, I mean, everybody's different the way they go about managing a game. And it was fun. It was fun to learn from him because, you never know who you're going to play for, what type of manager you're going to play for in the future. And it was good to be around a different mind.
Do you think he had a different mindset because that's the way he is, or do you think that part of that might have been from being a big league manager and then he's managing in the minor leagues, and he in the big leagues you probably don't have to be as hands-on, I guess is the right maybe the word, or do you just think that was his personality?
I think that had to do with it. I think it was his personality also. I think it was a little bit of both. I think with being in the big leagues and stuff, the way he went about the team and everything, managing and situations and moves we made during the game, I thought that was very, very big league. Like, I guess in our bullpen, we would have a right-handed pitcher come in to face, one right-handed hitter at the time. And then if there were 2 left-handed hitters up next, he would have a left-handed pitcher ready to go in the bullpen. And that was just something like I had never been around before. But it was neat to see because, I mean, just growing up, you see that on TV and everything when you're watching games. And I feel like that's the way you have to do it at this level. If you don't want to take a year to prepare guys to be ready for their situation and their role in the big leagues. And if there's going to be a guy that's a left-handed specialist that's going to come in to specifically get left-handed hitters out, I feel like you need to do that and prepare them for that role in the minor leagues. Because, I mean, that's ultimately what they're going to do if and when they do make it to the big leagues. And I think he did a great job of that as far as getting guys and putting guys in the right situations.
You struggled when you got to Pensacola last year in the second half, and we won't go into the numbers. They weren't real good. Any ideas on why you struggled once you got down to into Double
A? I think, you know, going into the season, one of my goals was to get to Double A, and I wouldn't say it was a sense of complacency when I did get there, because I don't think that was the right word, but I did kind of breathe a little bit, kind of take not a step back, but kind of just relax a little bit instead of pushing forward and I mean, from a quote from a good movie, announce my presence with authority, but just kind of relax and not, I wouldn't say stop working, but just kind of realize that I've gotten to my goal and didn't necessarily set another goal when I did get there. So I think that I had some bad luck. I started off slow, and I let that sense of doubt creep into my mind again, and it hurt me a little bit. But I think again, the entire season last year, I think is going to make me such a better player just because I know how to get through my struggles when they do happen.
And my guess is you learn something from achieving one goal and resetting another, you know, even if it's in mid-season.
Exactly. That definitely will never happen again where I do accomplish a goal and I just kind of let off the gas. I guess that's a better way to look at it. But that's one thing I did learn is that as soon as you accomplish one goal, you got to reset another one and jump on the gas pedal and get there. So.
Okay, I want to go back to Pensacola in a minute, but I'm kind of going chronologically for the year and season ended. And I assume you did Reds Fest this year also again?
Yeah, I did the Reds Fest and the Caravan.
And the Caravan. So tell us a couple stories about Reds Fest and who were you on the bus with in the Caravan and how that went.
Reds Fest was good. It was your normal Reds Fest. We did the whole Wolf of Wall Home Run Derby, which I finished, I think, second or third in.
Who won it?
Partner, Steve Selsky.
Steve, yeah.
Steve Selsky and his partner won it. But it was fun. I mean, again, being around all the 25-man roster and guys that you see just only in spring training. It was fun. It was a great time with the Caravan. I was on the bus again with Marty and Brandon and Jamie Ramsey and all those guys. So it was a good time. We went to Dayton and got to see the Wright Patterson Air Force Museum. That was pretty cool.
That's a phenomenal museum, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a nice place. That's the first time I've been there. Even when I played in Dayton, I didn't get a chance to go. But that's a kind of a little hobby of mine, I guess you'd say. We're like World War II and everything, and military planes and stuff is kind of one of my things. So I really thoroughly enjoyed that.
So and now you're in another aviation capital down there in Pensacola.
I know it. I hear I need to get out and see their museum too because it's supposed to rival Wright Pat. So I'm gonna try to get a week. We've been a little unfortunate with our off days because we've had to travel on a couple of the last ones so far. So we're hoping to get an off day here. I think we have one in the middle of June where we're actually at home. So that'll be nice.
So what does Marty call that part of the Caravan? Is that the Rock?
The Rock Star Tour.
The Rocks. Yeah, so you're part of the Rock Star Tour.
Yeah, the self-proclaimed Rock Star Group.
So how is it spending 3 or 4 days on a bus with Brandon Phillips? I would think that would wear you out.
Oh, it's fun. Brandon's a great guy. He's an absolute great stand-up guy that will answer any question you got, sign any autograph for anybody, take a picture with just about anybody. He's a great guy, and it was really a pleasure to be around all those guys.
Is he on like that all the time?
Yeah. I mean, he's pretty much is from sun up to sundown, just like he is on the field. He has a great time, and he's just a lot of fun.
He's got a lot of energy, no doubt about that.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So what else did you do in the off season?
Until it got cold, I played a lot of golf. I'm a big time golfer. I did go to my first PGA Tour tournament this past offseason in the fall with the BMW Championship in Indianapolis, which is like the second to last tournament of the year with all the with Tiger Woods and Rory and all those guys. So that was fun. I did just hung out and just tried to recoup from the season because it was a wild one and just get ready because I knew I had a big one coming up.
What's your handicap?
What's my handicap? To be honest with you, I don't know exactly what my handicap is, but I would say when I'm playing a good amount, I will shoot around give or take a couple strokes from 80.
Nothing wrong with that. Do you play much during the season?
To be honest with you, I've played twice in Pensacola this season, so that's a pretty good amount for a season so far. We're almost to June, so I can't really say that the season's young still. But I played a couple times. I try to because it's a getaway. I like to get out and just relax, especially in Pensacola. The course is. The team hooks us up with is on the water and everything, so it's kind of a good way to get your mind away from everything and check out the beach and play some golf.
But that takes us back to Pensacola. Tell us about playing in Pensacola. You got a brand new ballpark. Tell us about the field and the clubhouse and the conditions and everything in Pensacola.
Oh, it's awesome. The stadium, the scenery in the stadium is unbelievable. I mean, you're right on the bay. The entire outfield is backed up to water, so you see boats and everything every day, which is really cool. The park itself, the fans are wonderful. They pretty much pack it out every night, which is really nice. The clubhouse and everything's great. It's really big. There's a lounge, TVs, ping pong tables, stuff like that. The surface itself is second to none. I mean, it's darn near perfect. But it's just a great place to play. I mean, this league itself is just all around pretty good. So we're really fortunate in Pensacola, and I'm glad that they signed a new contract with them last year. So the other guys that are coming up to the system are going to be able to play here.
Let's talk about the Southern League for a minute. How's the travel in that league? And what have you seen of the good? What are the good best places to play, and some of the places where the stadiums aren't quite as nice? And tell us a little bit about the league.
The league itself is nice. There's only a few longer bus rides. I think so far we've already made our longest trip, which was 9 hours. So it's kind of lengthy, but it's definitely not bad when you're going back to Pensacola or when you're going to Kodiak, Tennessee, which is nice, which is almost to Knoxville, which their place is really nice to play. Chattanooga, where we're at right now, is a nice place to play. There aren't really, to be honest with you, that many bad parks in the league that I've been to, at least. I haven't been to the new park in Birmingham, I guess, is supposed to be a little bit better, actually. A couple of umpires that I talked to said it's better than Pensacola's as far as the stadium. I guess the view and stuff obviously isn't probably going to be as good just because it's not on the water, but I've heard their stadium's really nice. I have not been to Montgomery, which Montgomery's supposed to be pretty nice, too. Mississippi, where the Braves play, is very nice. Their stadium's very nice. They set up their clubhouse and their hotel and everything is really nice. So we're really fortunate in this league. Travel isn't outrageous. So that's always good. Just sitting on a bus for 10 to 12 to 13 or 14 hours is not good. And but the parks are really nice. There's not really a park on the schedule you're looking at where you're thinking, man, I got to go to it. So everything is pretty good.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about the Reds moving that Double-A team from Carolina down into Pensacola, because when we talked to a couple of guys that were playing in Carolina, they were on the far eastern edge of the Southern League, and when you had to make those trips to Montgomery and Mobile and over that way, it was a long haul.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard that their shorter bus rides were 6, 7, and 8 hours, so
yeah.
We're, like I said, really fortunate to where we are, and the stadium that we play at and the city that we're in, just because it's relatively close to a lot of places.
So, and I know your time is limited down there, but I mean, Pensacola, you got the golf and the water, and it's a pretty nice place in the summer. What else is there nice for a young guy to do while he's playing baseball in Pensacola?
Well, I mean, the beach is always good. The food, I absolutely love like southern food as far as like fish and stuff like that and seafood and everything. But so it's, I mean, there isn't, I have yet to be to a bad restaurant that's in Pensacola, to be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of different places to eat. I mean, you can do just about anything, really. I mean, there's places to go and see live music, which is a big thing of mine that I like to do. And, I mean, good places to eat, fish, if you love, to the beach. I mean, just about anything.
Talking about live music, tell us some of your favorites. Who do you listen to?
Man, some of my favorites. My dad plays in a band with some old high school buddies, like every weekend. So they play 70s and 80s rock and stuff. So I grew up around that. I play a little guitar every once in a while. My dad taught me and everything. So I listen to anything from Journey to Styx to all kinds of, like, Tom Petty to Ozzy Osbourne, anything like that. I love 70s and 80s rock. It's one of my passions.
I didn't think my opinion of you could get any higher, and then you tell me who you like in music, and now it just skyrocketed, you know? So we're about 2 months into the season, and as of today, you're hitting .281, and your on-base percentage is .355, which is phenomenal. Are you happy with your offensive numbers right now?
I am. I very much am. It's something that I really dedicated and devoted a lot of time to this winter and trying to figure out things that are going to help me just keep growing as a hitter and as a player. And I think that a lot of the work that I did this winter is paying off.
Your caught stealing percentage is down a little bit this year. Do you pay attention to that number?
To be honest with you, not really, because I feel like that it's gonna even out. I mean, I feel like my best attribute is being able to catch and throw, and I just feel like it's gonna, like I said, even out, and where it started isn't gonna be where it finished.
And I know from, you know, when we've talked in the past that your defense is your biggest thing you're proud of. You know, won the Golden Glove when you were at Dayton for the whole minor league system. So, I mean, do you feel like you're progressing defensively?
Absolutely. I think so. I think the biggest strides that I'm making, I think they're calling a game. I think the biggest is starting to get to the point for me where, and we had Manny Parra in on a rehab assignment our last home series, and it really talking to him about how, like, different catches that he's had, calling a game and everything. And I want to be a guy that people respect and that they know that if they are in trouble and they're not necessarily sure what they want to do as far as a pitch selection in this situation, I want them to know that if they can execute the pitch that I've called, that I'm putting themselves or that pitcher in a situation to succeed, and not just throwing down a random sign to think that we haven't thrown a slider here in a while, so let's throw a slider now. And that's not how I go about calling a game and everything. I think that's the biggest, for me as a player, that's where I'm making my biggest strides right now.
You were in the big league camp in spring training, and there's a lot, you know, Ryan Hannigan gets a lot of publicity around here for being a pretty cerebral player, and he was a philosophy major in college, and you know, he gets big kudos for the kind of game he calls and framing pitches and that kind of thing. Have you gotten any information, you know, any help, any tips from Ryan Hannigan?
No, I'm just sitting there just watching Hannigan go about his business, and I said it last year, I'm sure, when we did the same interview, but it, just being around those guys like Corky and Mez and Miguel Olivo in this camp and stuff, and just, again, it's just kind of like what we talked about at the beginning of the interview about with Griffey, just being around guys that have been in any kind of scenario and situation you can think of, and talking to them, well, how did you get out of that? Like, what did you do as far as damage control to get out of that? And that's a huge thing, because, I mean, a lot of times when, I mean, it's easy to call a game when a pitcher's got his best stuff, and it's those times where he doesn't have his best stuff, and you're at second and third with two outs in the eighth inning, and you've got to get out of it. And do you pitch around the guy, or do you go after a guy because you have somebody on deck that you don't think is as good a hitter, or what? I mean, what do you do? And learn from Corky and Mez and Hanny and guys like that. I mean, that's information that is just absolutely invaluable. I mean, there's no, you can't put the value to that number or to that information, because I mean that's stuff you can't get from anybody but guys that have been through that situation. And it's really, I'm really fortunate to be able to do that.
I'm sure some of the folks listening aren't aware that you're a switch hitter, but looking at your splits, you have quite a bit more success hitting left-handed versus right-handed.
Go ahead. No, I've always been. I mean, I was a natural left-handed hitter starting out, so I think if my at-bats this year have been heavily one-sided as far as left-handed to right-handed. I've had a lot more left-handed at-bats
right
than I have right-handed, which is a shock to me, is just how many different that it is. Because last year, I know it wasn't, I didn't think it was as much. But I think I've had my right-handed swing, honestly, feels better than it ever has. I've made some changes this winter from both sides. I went down in bat size. I went from a 33.5, 31 to a 30.5 ounce bat, and I think that it's really enabled me to have a lot better back control and be very confident at the plate.
And as you said, you haven't really done a whole lot of right-handed hitting this year. When I did my research, you'd only had 16 at-bats against right-handers. Do you think that, and you're back playing for Delino this year, correct?
Yeah.
Is this, you think this is by, and I know he rests you quite a bit. He makes sure you get enough rest. Do you think he rests you against left-handed hitters by design, or do you think that's just the way it's worked out?
I think that it's a little bit of both. I think that Delino wants to give me an off day. I mean, he knows that I'm a better hitter left-handed. So, I mean, I think that he kind of tries to find that day where there's going to be lefties that are going to start. And if he's going to give me an off day, I think it's going to be when the lefties throwing, just because it just kind of gives me a blow. And we have our other catcher, Danny Vizcoso, is right-handed. So, I mean, right-handed straight left-handers normally, historically better. So, I mean, I think it's an easy out for Delino to give me an off day with a lefty, knowing that we have a right-handed bat off the bench that's going to catch. So I think it's just a little bit of both. I think that he wants to give me a break, and then he also, there's a lefty coming, so we're going to give you a break, and we're going to give Danny the best opportunity to succeed.
I've been told that when you get to Double-A, that's when the major league team really starts paying attention to you, and I think you could see that by Donald Lutz getting called up off your squad, and he's played pretty darn well for the Reds since he's been up there. How much do you think about getting to the big club?
I mean, it's in the back of everybody's mind. It's really, like I said, evident at this level, especially when you see a guy like Cingrani who I played with all of last year, and then him getting called up at the end of the year, and then been up and down this year and having a great year, and then Lutz getting called up and playing and taking the opportunity and running with it. I mean, it makes you have no idea how unbelievably happy it makes you feel as a teammate to see a guy get called up and play well and everything. And I mean, cause it's everybody's dream. I mean, it's every little kid's dream that has been forever. Anybody that's playing pro baseball to play in the big leagues. And just to see two guys as good as Donald and Cingrani, not only as baseball players, but as people, to get called up and take, really, like I said, advantage of that opportunity. It really is fun to watch and makes you happy to see. But it's in everybody's back of everybody's mind when and if I even make it to the big leagues, and am I putting myself in the best situation to succeed in order to get to the big leagues. So it's in everybody's back of their mind. But I mean, you just can't. You can't push yourself and try and stress about it, just because, it's a lot of luck. I mean, you got to be at the right place at the right time. and you have to be playing well. So, I mean, if you're not playing well, then, I mean, there's, to be honest with you, I don't think you have a chance. But so you have to control what you can control, and that's the way that you play on the field. And I think, like I said, it's in the back of everybody's mind, so you just got to go out and perform.
I'm going to jump off my script here for a second since you talked about Cingrani. He pitched very well up here. His ERA was somewhere around 3 or something like that. But the knock on him was that he didn't throw anything, but he was throwing like 90% fastballs. When you caught him, was he mixing stuff up more, or was he able to get away in the minor leagues with throwing that many fastballs?
Well, I think Tony has really good fastball command, and he was able to control fastballs on both sides of the plate. So there would be a lot of times where we would go quite a while throwing just fastballs, just because he could do it.
And he could put it wherever he wanted it, huh?
What's that?
I said he could put it wherever he wanted it.
Exactly, yeah. He could put it wherever he wanted, up, down, in, out, and stuff. And it's not like he was just throwing fastballs down the middle and guys weren't hitting it. So I don't want there to be a misconception that I was just throwing down one and he was throwing heaters right down the middle just because he threw harder and nobody could hit it. That wasn't the case. Tony has really good fastball command. He has really good breaking ball and a really good changeup. I mean, but like I said, there were times where we wouldn't necessarily use it as much as we should have, just because we were getting guys out and we wanted Tony to stick in the ball games and not go deep in counts when he didn't have to.
Right.
And I think that, again, as we talked earlier, that it's where the winning and development, there's a fine line between that, because there would be times where we would be, again, 3-2, or we were 3-2 count to a left-handed hitter with guys on second and third and two outs, and if we probably should have threw a breaking ball there just because he needs to do that. But we knew that if we threw a fastball, he wasn't going to hit it. So we just threw a fastball and struck the guy out, and we went on to the next inning and got out of the jam. So, I mean, there's a fine line between winning and development and everything. But Tony's a very polished pitcher. I think Tony's a very good – he has a very good arm and very good – head on shoulders, and he likes to compete. And he's very one of my favorite guys to catch, just because he comes right at you and goes right after you and says, "Here it is. If you're going to beat me, you're going to have to hit it because I'm not going to let myself throw it."
Yeah, I saw an early report on his start last night in Louisville, and they said he probably threw 25 or 35% of his stuff was breaking stuff last night. So apparently, they did send him down with a plan. And he showed when he was up here, he's not very far away from being ready.
Yeah, no, his breaking ball and his changeup and stuff, they're right there. I mean, he just has to get the same amount of confidence with that he does with his fastball, and it'll be the sky's the limit.
Get back on my script here. Ryan Hannigan's in the last year of his deal. There's no real catching prospect at AAA. I mean, Corky Miller's not the future. He's never going to spend a whole lot of time up with the big club. How far away do you think you are?
To be honest with you, I'm not real sure. I know that how I feel as a player right now, I feel better than I think I ever have, to be honest with you, as far as being able to do both of being able to call a game and catch the way I know I can catch, and then being able to swing the bat like I always have, and being able to put both of those together and showing how complete of a player that I am. So I feel like, it's coming. I don't know if it's going to be soon. I don't know if it's going to be the latter, but I know what I'm doing as a player. I feel really good, and I feel like I'm being consistent and I think there's a part of my game that is lacking right now. So I think I put myself in a good situation as far as being able to produce at the level that I'm at right now. And that's the only thing I can ask for, is to produce at the level that I am and see what happens.
And control what you can control and not worry about the other stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you give, and this probably isn't a fair question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Do you give any thought to the fact that you got a 25-year-old former minor league player of the year in front of you on the Reds roster?
To be honest with you, I don't. I love Mez. I love being around Mez. He's a great guy, and he's a good guy to pick his brain and to learn about different situations that he's been through again. So, I mean, it's just, I've been very fortunate to be around some great players. And if I were to tell you that I sat back and watched and sit and worry about what Mez and those guys did, then I'd be lying to you, just because I know that, and I don't mean that in any way, shape, or form to be cocky at all. I know that if I can play the way I can play and develop like I'm developing now, that I feel like I'm putting myself in the best situation to have success. And now, whether that be with the Reds or whether that be with anyone else, I mean, hopefully it's with the Reds. I would love nothing more to come up with the Reds. Yeah. But I do know also that it is a business, and that I am playing every night. I'm playing for 29 other teams, and that if I were to worry about what Mez is doing at the plate or behind the plate, or what Haney's doing or what Corky's doing in Triple A or whatever, that I would be hurting myself, because I would be putting a lot more pressure on myself than I need to, and that would in turn hurt me as a player, because I would be pressing and worrying about a lot of things that I have absolutely no control over. And I mean, as cliche as it sounds, I'm a big believer in, you can, like I said earlier, you have to control what you can. And the only thing I can control is the way I play and the way I think and what I do on a daily basis. So, I mean, like I said, it is a business, and I would love nothing more to come up with the Reds. But I've been a 25-year-old player, the youth catcher, like you said. I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, there's there's a chance I'm with the Reds. There's a chance I'm not. So, like I said, every night, one thing that they preach in the minor leagues is that you're not playing for just the Reds when you go out and play every night. So, I feel like I'm putting myself in the best situation and the best scenario to have success, and it's working out so far.
You talked about watching these other guys, and something else just occurred to me. Another thought: when you're out somewhere, you're sitting in a bar having a beer, and watching the games on television, do you watch the catchers more than anybody else just to see what they're doing, or are you at that point just a fan watching a ball game?
I'm a fan just watching a ball game, honestly, but it does creep into your head like you're watching the catchers. I mean, if you're at a concert and you're playing and you're a bass player, I mean, you're going to probably pay attention to the bass. Even if you're the biggest fan, it's the biggest band in the world, the Rolling Stones or whatever. And you're going to pay attention to the bass player, probably just because that's what you do. You play bass and everything. But I'm a huge fan of baseball. I love watching it. But I mean, I find myself sometimes just watching the catchers, just seeing what they're doing. Just not because I'm trying to, but just because that's what I do. So I mean, I try not to sometimes, because you don't want to, I mean, overanalyze things, and you want to get your mind away from it. But I find myself doing it every once in a while.
You talked about goals earlier. What are your goals for this year? What is your goal for 2013?
Well, going into the year, I want to get off to a good start. I mean, it's a lot easier, it's a lot easier to breathe and kind of relax and take a step back when you start off well, and you can kind of. It's a lot easier to deal with an 0-3 or an 0-4 when you start off well and you know you got a little room for error. So when you start off slow, I mean, an 0-2 or 0-3 or 0-4, it feels like it's the end of the world. So I wanted to start off well, which I felt like I did. And one of the not necessarily statistical goals, but it was just to not let an 0-3 or 0-4 get to me as much as I did last year. And I think that it's helped me entirely. I mean, not letting myself think that it's the end of the world when I didn't get a hit one night or whatever, or struck out a couple times, but just know that you've got another game's coming. I mean, you're going to play tomorrow, and you're going to have four or five more at-bats to right the ship. So I think I've done that pretty well this year. But as far as real goals, I mean, I would like to get to Louisville by the end of the year, and I want to say that, like I said last year, with getting from Bakersfield to Pensacola, I'd like to see if I can get to Louisville by the end of the year, and we'll see what happens.
Going back to what you talked about a minute ago, I assume what you're talking about, like, is if you have a bad night and you let it get to you, it can steamroll and get you rolling in the wrong direction, rather than just kind of like having a relief pitcher mentality rather than just pushing it away and going out the next day.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to – that 0-for-4 can turn into an 0-for-10 real quickly. If you just do the simple math, I mean, one more hit a week or whatever will turn you from a 275 hitter to a 310 hitter. And there's a big difference as far as – and I know it's a little down the line, but as far as in the big leagues, I mean, there's guys that – I mean, there's a lot more money at 310 than there is at 275. So, I mean, there's a little but big difference when it comes to letting an 0-for-4 get to an 0-for-10 or being able to kind of grind out a hit during that 0-for-10. Instead of 0-for-10, it's 1-for-10. So there's a big difference as far as the numbers are when you get to that scenario. But it'd be a lot not letting that stuff get to me.
Well, Tucker, that's all we've got for today, and I want to thank you again for getting with us in the morning before you got a game tonight, and you had one last night. And I want to tell you, if you get called up to Louisville, you let me know, and we'll be coming down there to see you play down there.
No, I appreciate that very much. It's always a pleasure being here with you guys, and let's do it a lot sooner than later this time. Huh?
Absolutely. Good luck, and hopefully we'll talk to you later on in the season.
Appreciate it, Bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.